And so on top of the visuals, the score, I listened to the score like for a week, just going to school listening to the
Me and my teammates, throughout practice, were just randomly screaming that, like, ah, or somebody makes a shot, and everyone's like, listen al Gaib, listen al Gaib, and everyone's like, what the f*** are these guys talking about?
Three men who also happen to be best friends, as well as a bunch of complete movie nerds, are on a mission to save the world. With a podcast that really, honestly, doesn't help with or solve any of the world's problems whatsoever. Sorry. Please grab your bowl of popcorn and your sugar-free beverage. Get to your seats. Sit back, relax, and enjoy a brand new episode of All Screens and Sizes.
Welcome back to All Screens and Sizes. Today we are here to discuss a movie that should be seen on the biggest of screens. Sorry to the little ones. And that movie is Dune Part 2, the epic sequel to Dune Part 1, both inspired by Frank Herbert's Dune sci-fi novels. But before we see if the three of us had the eyes of Stilgar, head over heels for that of Dune Part 2, or a little more reluctant, like the eyes of Shani, let's see how everyone is doing. What's up, fellas? How are y'all doing today?
Good. We're good. We're good, man. Excited to finally get into this Dune 2. I know our name is All Screens and Sizes, but you're right. This is not inclusive to all screens and sizes. We need the biggest screen of the biggest size for this blockbuster experience of a movie. We'll see if we actually all enjoyed it, but definitely deserves our time and money to go see, even in IMAX if possible. But all is good. Personally, I'm getting ready to have a bit of an ankle surgery coming up soon. Get my ankle back and healthy to play, hopefully, basketball again ASAP. But, you know, other than that, life is good, man. Excited to see you guys again. How are you, Nick?
I'm good, and wishing you all the best with the operation, Jordy. You know, we're thinking about you, of course.
Appreciate it.
But boys, man, it's great to be back talking about Dune 2. I know this was highly anticipated for all of us, and you've both said it already, but man, let's put this thing on the big screen. We don't need any small screens for this epic. But just happy to be here. For me personally, my season's winding down a little bit. We got a couple weeks left of the regular season and then getting into playoff time. But fortunately, I was able to sneak away on a road trip and go see Dune 2.
What about you, Phil? How you been, man?
We're fantastic. Lincoln had a great week of birthday parties. I think he had 5. Woo. So we've had a lot of excitement. And then I am a week away from spring break. I'm hoping there's some good movies out so I can go see one every day. Because if you remember, guys, this time last year I had kidney stones and I was drugged up and I was going to the movies.
You were falling asleep during all types of movies during this
time. Yeah, so hopefully that doesn't happen this time around. But I'm good. Sorry. So since everyone else is good, let's go and get started. Before we get to Dune 2, I don't believe we did a little podcast or anything on Dune 1. It may have been part of a smaller podcast. But let's get our quick thoughts on what we thought about Dune 1 before we jump into Dune 2. As you remember, Dune 1 was the first part of this series coming out. And I think this is why I had to lead the podcast today, just because you guys wanted to set me up. It is directed by Denis Charlie Villanueva. I am awful at names. Sorry. I think it's more like Denis Villeneuve or something. I don't know. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Phil. See, we've come a long way, baby. Phil. From Charlie Villanueva all the way to an unbelievable pronunciation of a Denis Villeneuve. I'm just so proud of you, Phil. We're all about growth on this podcast.
It's because I have Google thing and I can click it in Google and kind of listen to it. But we know that he helmed this to start it off. His famous things before that was, or beautiful things, as we should say, done Sicario, the Arrival. I'm forgetting something. What's the big one? Oh, Blade Runner. So we know when he does something, it's going to be beautifully shot. The first movie, I think, grossed just under $500 million, which was still a success because it was a smaller budget. So I'll go and get started with my Dune 1 thoughts. I think I was the only one at the time who was hyping it up as much as I was. Every time I talked to someone about it, they were like, nothing happened. I'm like, everything is happening. Fantastic storytelling is beautiful. I loved it. If we ever get to a top podcast of like our top films, Dune 1 will be making an arrival on it because I just love that movie so much. Right. Obviously, if you love Star Wars, how do you not love Dune? Because George Lucas was inspired by Dune itself. The novels. And then there are some movies that came out too that weren't so great. But I thought Denis Villeneuve did a great job with Dune 1. So it definitely had me excited to get to Dune 2. So what was y'all's thoughts about Dune 1?
I actually had a just to prepare my teammates, I invited a bunch of my teammates over here at my place to set up with the projector to have basically indoctrinate them with that Dune 1, which was an essential. Some of these goofies when it goes, let me just watch Dune 2 without seeing Dune 1, and I'm sure I'll get along and understand everything. I'm like, no, it's not how it was written over here. So we got that done. Biggest takeaway for me with Dune 1 was that it was probably the most intense feeling that I've had in a theater. And I've mentioned this to you guys before, even on the pod. I was just sitting in a theater seat, and I just couldn't remember the last time I was that just blown into my seat with just the sheer size, scale, sound design, the whole shebang. Just had me push back into my seat for the whole runtime of the movie. And I just knew, the only thing I knew for sure, I wasn't 100% sure what the hell was all going on and what it was setting up and whatnot. I never read the books, but all I did know was that I wanted more, and I wanted it right away. So we had to wait a long time, even with being postponed. But I was so damn excited to get to continue this amazing story. So yeah, I loved Dune 1, and I guess we'll get into our thoughts later for Dune 2. What about you, Nick? Did you enjoy it as much as we did or not?
Yeah, I was right there with you guys. I mean, I can't remember a time where I was like truly just like blown back, like, wow, this is a spectacle that I'm watching on the screen. And that was like the first takeaway for me, was like, wow, I hadn't seen anything like this movie on this big screen in terms of the visuals and the just the sheer scale and scope and size and the whole world that was built just so masterfully. And that's another thing that I took away. It was just like people, like you were saying, Phil, people were saying, oh, this, nothing's happening. And but he was so meticulous in crafting this world and crafting this, just this spectacle on the screen for us. And I truly appreciated that. Nothing felt rushed. It was, he totally immersed us in this world. And like you, Jordy, I hadn't read the book, so I wasn't totally familiar with all the backstory and everything, but I felt like he took us to Arrakis, and he took us to this whole world and truly set the tone for something that was potentially coming that was even more special. So while, you know, some people were complaining and nothing really happened, I loved immersing myself in that world. And like you both said, it was just it really set up something that could potentially be even more special in Dune 2, which got us all excited, I think.
How many times did you end up watching Dune 1, Phil? You watched it like a ton of times.
My
dude.
Gosh. So I saw it, this is no lie, it's surprised it did so well, is because it was one of those movies during the COVID era where it released in movies and HBO Max at the same time. So I watched it in IMAX night one, came home and watched it on HBO Max immediately after. I watched it twice in a row. Yes, and then I think I watched it every day after that at home. And I saw
it until today.
Well, yeah, I'm serious. And
3 years running straight, every day.
I saw it twice in theaters and IMAX that week, and then I just kept watching it at home. I couldn't stop watching it. I just loved being there. Arrakis.
Listen to the Kaib.
Right. Yeah, it was. I think this was the first. This was the first movie that I saw. I think this was my first return to theaters after COVID. I was being extra cautious, and everything. But this was like, yeah, this is gonna get me out of the house. I was ready to see Dune 2 or Dune 1 at that time.
All right, so good on our thoughts on Dune 1. Let's go ahead and jump into the newbie now, Dune 2. Before we jump into the movie, not only did we have the movie, and I'm not sure if either one of us got one, but did anyone snag a bucket?
Man, I had my hopes up, man. You know, I was just already excited to see a movie, but I was excited to even have even a more amazing time in the theaters, if you know what I mean. So, unfortunately, we didn't have them around here, which was a bummer. But I was even considering going on eBay and finding one. It was a cult.
It's become Nick legendary at this point, right?
Yeah. Nick's talking about Barbie being this cultural phenomenon. Nah, Barbie ain't got shit on this thing right here, man. This was bringing people together all across the globe. Everyone trying to get a piece of that.
Or, you know, or taking us apart. You know, you didn't need anyone around you. You just needed you, yourself, and that bucket at this time. You know what I mean?
I saw a lot of people walking into that Sydney Sweeney movie with that thing too. I don't know what that was all about.
It's a multi-purposeful bucket.
Phil, did you get one? I feel like you're like waiting. No, like, so you're gonna pull it out on camera or something.
No, so I had that like exclusive week early screening, thinking like, oh, if they're there, I'll get them because people will be buying them like crazy. Apparently only AMC had the buckets, and I'd go to a Regal theater, so no. But I did look on eBay. They were like double the price. The problem is a lot of them said used. And I didn't know, I don't know if they meant used as they ate popcorn out of it or the other. So I didn't
it's not a risk you're willing to take, huh?
No.
I think the majority of people went to the register and asked for the bucket. Extra butter, no popcorn, if you know what I mean.
Hey, for all of our listeners that are a little confused right now, we're not going to describe in detail, but just a quick Google search, Dune 2 popcorn bucket. You'll understand what we're talking about.
Might have to turn your filters off to make sure you get an actual image of it. It might be censored.
Not safe for work filters.
Yeah. So yeah.
Check it out. All right, so Dune 2. Who would like to go first? Who wants to dive in and give their thoughts on Dune?
I would like Nick to go first. He's the last person to see it, so you and I have had a bit of marinating going on.
Oh, yeah.
Even though it hasn't been super recent for Nick, I'm curious to see like if he's still in that state of mind where it's just completely consuming you. You know what I mean? So Nick, go ahead.
Yeah. So I had to wait a little bit to see the movie. These guys had seen it, and it was just taking everything in me for all of us, I think, to not discuss it here on the pod. But it took us a little bit of time because. I didn't have a chance to see it until I was traveling from Mykonos, but the first chance that I got tickets. I was in butts in the seats. It was still an amazing theater experience, packed house. And I think this was probably my most anticipated movie of the year for 2024. Mm. And I have to say, you know, Phil mentioned Dune 1 being up there in his top movies of all time. Dune 1 was also up there for me, and I feel like Dune 2 surpassed it in almost every way for me. It was, the visuals were just as stunning, if not more. We had just the progression of the story. I just absolutely loved every aspect of this movie. I sent a text message to both of you guys saying, hey, I'm going into Dune 2, wish me luck, whatever it might be. And Jordy said something like, you know, don't text us with any live reactions. Just totally immerse yourself. And that's what I did. And I was in the world of Arrakis. I was in the world of Dune, and I loved every second of it. I was totally immersed. It was almost 3 hours long. I wanted 3 hours more. I was like so sad when it was over because I didn't want to leave my seat in the theater. And I know we can get into a little more detail about, you know, what we saw, the plot points and everything. But my just initial reactions were it was truly one of the best movies I've ever seen. And maybe there's a little recency bias, but it was everything I wanted it to be.
Jordy?
So I didn't see it on like release day. So obviously a lot of people saw it before I did, and I was catching some glimpse of people praising it to be not just one of the best sequels ever, one of the greatest movies they've ever seen. You know, usually when a good movie comes out, you'll see people say stuff like, hey, this might be the movie of the year. But people were going out of their ways to announce that this was the best movie they had ever seen. And that usually is something that rubs me the wrong way.
It's like
and
red flag at that point.
I'm like, this is not going to be the best movie ever made. You know, you kind of go in like that, like there's no way, kind of sarcastically. So I went to see with some of my teammates. My dad was there. Great seats, great anticipation. And it might very well be one of the best movies I've ever seen, to be honest with you guys. And even when they're able to do that with when you don't even want it, or you don't even kind of want to expect it to be that good, that is an impressive feat for you to turn around like that. It definitely is long. Didn't feel super long. Looking back at it, I've seen it twice now. Maybe there's some parts that could have be trimmed down a little bit, but I just didn't want to leave the world. So I had no problem with every second that we spent in that world. And I just couldn't stop thinking, what a freaking insane cast of actors, actresses, characters we have before us. And I hope it makes all the money in the world so we can get Denis Villeneuve, aka Charlie Villanueva, to get back in the director's chair, finish his screenplay for that third Messiah adaptation. Because
we need it. We need it.
We need that.
Yeah, we do. And speaking of money, I think they just hit $600 million worldwide. So obviously doing more than the first one. Dune 2 for me. Masterpiece of cinema. It is truly fantastic.
It's going to be a boring podcast, guys.
No discourse here, but we can.
It's so good. Like you said. So like there's two. Three things happened at movie theater. One, I watched the movie all the way through. I'm chilling. And I'm good. Two,
didn't fall asleep.
Fall asleep. Two, I checked my phone a couple times to see, all right, where we're like, how, like, is it almost over, whatever. Three, I also checked my phone to see how much more we have left. And I kept checking my phone several times because, like, I was wanting to see how much time I had left with this because I didn't want it to end. And every time I checked, I'm like, oh no, there's like an hour left. Like, I was just countdown. I was getting mad. I'm like, no, let's not end. Let's keep going. And just because we already know, one, that this is supposed to be the ending of the first book, and then we got the next book is planned. But I just want the next book now. I just want it to keep going. And like that's how you know you got me. When I just want the movie to keep going and not end.
Yeah.
I want more. And like y'all said, the cast is fantastic. Christopher Walken's a little distracting. But other than that, the cast is fantastic. The characters are so well done. Again, this is a book. I have read the book. Everything is fantastic. There are some changes from the book that we can get to if y'all want to later. It's a desert planet, and like Anakin Skywalker, I hate sand. I wouldn't want to be there, but being there watching it, like, I want more of the sand. Give it to me. Give me worms. Give me sand. Give me blue-eyed people. Give me water filled from the lifeless bodies of people who have died before. Like, I'm all into the whole culture and everything, and I would put on a suit and I will go walk in that formation with my Lisan Al Gaib if that's what it took to get to the promised land.
Hey, someone get some sand in this bucket for Phil, all right?
I'll tell you this, Phil. You brought up Anakin Skywalker. I'll tell you, maybe the only negative thing about this movie for me. I'm watching this movie, having a time of my life. And as we all know, we're like the ultimate Star Wars nerds, geeks, lovers, admirers, passionate fans. I'm watching this movie and I'm like, holy shit, George Lucas. You ripped this off. Oh, you stole this from there. You stole that part from Star Wars from here. I saw the mother of Star Wars, the birthplace of Star Wars, right in front of my eyes. And it became so clear to me, not just Star Wars, but all these huge movie franchises, universes that were, you know, built off of this book. And I could see all the pieces, all the roots, all the places of origin. I'm like, damn. I did not know it was that obvious, but the parallels are unmistakable.
Well, George hasn't denied. He says that's where he got a lot of the stuff from. But what I think is funny, George, is how you say that, is I've seen a lot of people on Twitter and wherever else, they're not aware of the timeline, and they're saying this is copying Star Wars, which is funny to me that they're saying they just copy stuff. Like, no, y'all got it backwards. It's the other way around.
Yeah. Sorry, the first book was like what, like 1965?
Yeah, 1965.
Yeah. So yeah, there's your timeline for you.
I'll just say this about the movie, just kind of broadly. a thumper. The second half of this movie was so damn epic. Like, just the size, the scale, the what we were watching on screen, it really picked up in pace, and it was unbelievable. But I almost enjoyed the first half of this movie even more, where it was like, I absolutely loved the love story, you know, the whole coming of age aspect for Paul. And I thought that Chalamet and Zendaya, they were incredible. And I feel like, you know, you see like the ambushes, the love story, everything where it was kind of continuing on from the first movie. I was so bought into that. And then obviously the second half of the movie kind of picks up and we get more action, more of the war starting and everything. But the first half of the movie worked as well, if not better, for me, when it was still kind of building and more character development and sort of building the shocking ending between Paul and Chani as well. So,
man, yeah, I agree that because it was such a huge movie with all these different sides, it pretty much gave you a little bit of everything. So we had the whole, you know, Paul back against the wall trying to just survive and get his feet on the ground and get to safety, and then from point A to point Z, like, just being him growing into that role, slowly kind of buying into the whole thing, if you will. And then right when I thought that maybe I kind of got the gist of the movie, I knew where we're going, boom, then you throw in Fade Rautha, aka Austin Butler, in there to spice things up, pun intended, taking us to that planet Giddy Prime, whatever it was called, and just having that moment and that story being told kind of in its vacuum, and the design of the planet, having the black and white, it just like was perfectly timed and paced to kind of take you out of the Arrakis conflict and give you that extra build up for a very, very epic finale. Because, you know, even we don't have to get into all the details, but it's all the beautiful callbacks to even stuff they've set up in Dune 1. Paul using the same move that he used in the very first Dune training as he's taken down Austin Butler at the end to stab him. Like, there's so much development and building these characters with so much care and love that you cannot help but love the effort that Charlie Villanueva put into this.
So. Hey, and that gladiator scene was so dope too with Austin Butler. And like, I'm not a big Austin Butler fan in terms of like, I'm just not a big fan of his, but it made it even easier for me to like despise him. And so I feel like he did an amazing job. Like, he knocked it out of the park. And you were always kind of unnerved when he was on screen. Like, you never know what he was going to do, but it kind of helped me that I didn't like him as an actor and I hated his character as well, but amazing character, and hats off to Austin Butler, cause he was amazing.
So Nick, you mentioned the first half, second half. So for me, I love I like both halves, whatever I'm saying. I'm just saying as I'm watching, I'm going to ask you guys the first half I love, because I love that Paul better, where he's not buying into the whole thing. And then obviously we know the second half, he converts into it once he has the life water or whatever. So as you're watching it, because we know we have two fundamental differences here. We have, you know, you have Stilgar, who's all in belief of the story, the chosen one and all that. And then you have Chani, who is not all for it. She doesn't believe in it. I watch the movie through her lens. Like, I don't believe in it. So I follow the path. So as I'm watching the first part, I'm all like, they're in love. He's doing the honorable thing, getting to learn the stuff, whatever. And then when the second half comes and he goes into it, I get like kind of upset, because like, that's not the path I want him to take, which I'm not control the path. That's what makes it good. But as I'm watching it, I'm more on her side. So what side are you guys on as you're watching it, as Paul is moving along through the movie?
I am definitely Team Chani, baby. I'm all Team Chani at this point. And like, I feel like I still have not recovered from Paul like telling telling her like that he'll love her until his final breath or whatever he said, and then turning around and asking for the emperor's daughter's hand in marriage. Like I gasped. I was like, come on, man. Like I didn't know what side I was on until that moment, and I'm full team Shani at this point.
I mean, yeah, I agree. I totally agree. Obviously, I think maybe one of the biggest, maybe I don't want to say changes or turns compared to Dune 1's, I couldn't stand, obviously, as we should probably couldn't stand his mother, you know?
Like, right.
They're kind of the devil on the shoulder, kind of whispering to things. They're kind of really manipulating him into really believing to become the Messiah. But yeah, I couldn't agree more. And there, let's be honest, again, there's probably a good reason why the final shot of the movie is all about Shani and all about her journey and her next step, which got me really excited. They were able to kind of pivot towards that too and didn't just make her push her back to the background and really get the thing set up. Because I also think, obviously, there's not a lot of people around that hate Zendaya, you know. She's beautiful. She's talented. But I think even with all that, she deserves more credit than she's getting for her role in this movie, because she was so subtle at times and really acted her ass off.
She acted her ass off, man. I was like feeling when you could just see the emotion on her face, and like I was starting to like feel what she was feeling, like just based on her like facial expressions.
She does. Yeah. I think her strength when acting is her angry and disappointment on her face. Like she portrays it like I think as good as anybody, or better. Like anytime I watch her something, she can show you how she's angry and disappointed with her face. Like you believe it. Yeah, she's fantastic. Yeah. Speaking of ass off, did y'all see that little outfit she wore that like had her butt cheeks out? Did y'all not see that?
At the premiere, you mean?
At the premiere, she had, it was like a Dune type suit.
Oh,
it
was
like,
that was awesome. That was awesome.
Yeah,
that was cool. For me, I mean, we can talk about more things, but the biggest, I guess the two biggest things that I love most, the one is an easy score, but man, these sandworms, baby.
The worms.
And anytime there's a worm even remotely closer on screen, it's just like goosebumps, tension, stress, and, you know, Paul summoning his first worm, if you would. Like,
oh, that was such an epic scene when he's riding his first worm. Oh,
like, is it a big one? Well, I didn't think it was going to be that big. You know what I mean?
That whole scene, man, is incredible.
If you're going to do a Dune adaptation, you got to nail the worms, and they did. All right,
yeah. So that's worms.
They absolutely did it. But for me, when I went back to think about this movie, I think my favorite thing is how they were able to nail kind of the aura surrounding Paul and his legend, as his legend was growing on all sides of the whole Dune Arrakis conflict. You know, I guess the Usul legend, on the other side, you get when he was the Kwisatz Haderach. You know, there's all different entities that all obviously are all Paul, but seeing the absolute fear and legend that was surrounding him as the uproar and all the attacks and rebellion was rising, which is so well done. You could really feel it in the air whenever anyone was surrounding him. And then culminating that with the attack and the infiltration of the Emperor's fortress, you know, all that stuff. That was just like, you could just really feel him walking up the stairs with the mask, his whole aura, his energy surrounded. He really placed you into the shoes of his enemies. Be like, oh my God, this is the guy we've been hearing about all these months. Like, this is the fucking, we got to run, you know, like that whole kind of like Rogue One, Darth Vader aura, like going into the hallway. This is, you could really feel it as you were watching him taking those steps. So that was probably my favorite detail, or not detail, but thing about this movie, really feeling that.
I think to go off what you said, Jordy, like Javier Bardem's character, his name's escaping me. He was great.
Stilgar,
thank you. And he kind of really gave the perspective into the mindset of just like the pure faith and the pure belief and the religious aspect. And I think that that really played well with what you were talking about of kind of building up this aura and this legend of who this guy could be. And I think that his portrayal of Stilgar was super powerful as well.
Yeah, I think it just made me think of that. And I don't know if, because you had the subtitles thing going on, Nick, where there's the part where after his mother got the water and Paul denies the stuff still, he's like, I'm not the chosen one and all that stuff, whatever. And then they go off to the side and Stilgar's like, look at his genius. He's even denying it to them. No matter what he did, they still believed it. I think that's what Denis gets so right out of this movie and what Frank wanted out of the books was, and it could be tied to anything. It could be tied to religions. It could be tied to political stuff or whatever. The issue with believing as the one thing to save you, just it's just like how Shani just denies it. She says it's a way to keep you in fear and control. And you see that same thing happen with the Harkonnens. They're all cheering at the fight, but like those people are in fear of those people. They don't have any power. And it's kind of the same thing here. If we follow Paul, what happens? So I think the way he portrayed it in the movie, it goes really well with what Frank wanted from the book. And like you said, Jordy, even at the end, like that aura around Paul, it's just like how he flips. It's like all before he's not on board with it. He's still being a leader. He's a good person. He's whatever. And then all of a sudden he flips. And now he's just like this commanding menace where even he uses their own tricks against the Bene Gesserits where the ladies
silence.
Like, yeah. He tells her to be quiet. Like, and it's just such a cool, like, even I'm not even pulling for him, but in that moment, I'm like, yeah, you got her back. Like even if you kind of buy in still a little bit, like I'm kind of with him on that. But I'm still not all the way with it. It's just, I think it's just fantastic.
It's also just insane to me that this book from the 60s, damn near 50 years old, is put on the screen and it still also feels still so current. Like there are so many elements and conflicts that are like direct parallels with stuff that's still going on today. And it's just like, that's when you know that it's a true, one of the greatest stories in sci-fi or any stories for that matter of all time, that it's just so still up to date and current as well. Yeah,
and I think we got to give a lot of credit to Charlie Villanueva for that because he's taken this, like you said, it is current and it can still be so impactful today, but he's brought it to the screen, you know, he's turned it into something. And I don't know the name of the cinematographer or the guy who's in charge of that for these movies. I should have done my research, but that guy deserves a lot of love too, because just the way everything looks makes it it takes you to where you're supposed to be or where you're intended to be in that moment. And I got to give that guy a lot of credit. I'll look his name up right now while you guys take it away, but he was amazing.
Well, and so on top of the visuals, the score, I listened to the score like for a week, just going to school listening to the
me and my teammates throughout practice were just randomly screaming that, like, or somebody makes a shot and goes, listen al Gaib, listen al Gaib. And everyone's like, what the fuck are these guys talking about? Like, last game, somebody makes a three and we're doing the sand walk on the side of the court. Or somebody walks out of the tunnel, we're like hitting the floor, like we're summoning a worm. It's like, yeah, it's just like, it doesn't happen that often that you watch a movie and it's super exciting. And then for the next couple of days, you're thinking about it and maybe, you know, we'll get on a call and discuss it. But like, this is a movie that really gets under your skin and you just can't stop thinking about it and processing it. And you want more and you want to overanalyze and you really want to dive into it. Kind of similarly how Star Wars did to us back in the day, you know. So it's just, that's when you know it's just cuts through deeper than just any regular old blockbuster movie in that regard.
So his name, sorry, good, great words there, Jordy, thank you. I don't mean to interrupt, but Greg Fraser is the guy's name. Australian cinematographer Greg Fraser, who's done Zero Dark Thirty, Rogue One, The Creator, which Jordy gave a lot of love to, and some Mandalorian, as well as The Batman, Dune Part 1 and Part 2. So a lot of love to that guy.
Batman, huh?
Yeah.
Got some bangers.
How about that?
He really struggled to make Robert Pattinson look good, but, you know. But that's an impossible job. You know, you can't blame this guy for that.
Goodness. So, it hasn't been, am I correct? It hasn't been greenlit that Dune 3 is, I mean, it's going to happen, but it hasn't been officially.
Yeah. So, Charlie himself said he only wants to make it if it can surpass Dune 2 as a story, as a script. So he's writing it now, I believe. Mm-hmm. But he wants the screenplay to like really be incredible and blow him away. Obviously, we don't have to worry about it not making enough money to get greenlit, but it's all going to come down to him wanting to do it. Because let's be honest, even though I haven't read all the books, I have kind of looked at a little bit the stories and kind of how this huge story continued. And I mean, it's safe to say that, you know, after Dune Messiah, stuff tends to go a little more downhill. So I think we will have one more, hopefully, and that will be a great wrapping up arc to Paul's story. And Charlie even said in interviews that that would be his perfect thing, ending this arc with Paul. So
Jordy, did you hear about the story of these books, like in a bathroom somewhere? Did someone discuss this with you, or it was spoiled for you, or did you do this damage on your own?
I got a quick short little book presentation at the urinal stall, you know.
Okay. Jordy gets things spoiled for him in movie theater bathrooms all the time. So
what movie was it again? The big spoiler that happened.
Star Wars.
It was The Last Jedi, wasn't it?
It was Flying Leia,
yeah,
right?
Flying Leia.
I went to the bathroom.
We're warning you for good reason.
And back then, we were still hyped out of our minds.
Oh, I thought The Last Jedi was the best movie ever made.
Yes, and we watched it together, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. And I'm pretty sure you shouted some absurdities when that scene actually did happen.
I was like, this dude is trolling me. I'm taking a leak, and I hear these dudes go, could you believe that fucking flying Leia through space? I'm like, what are these guys talking about? There's no way in hell.
Maybe she had a ship. Maybe that's what he meant.
Yeah, of course not. Like flying, like fucking Superman. movie
the power of the sun.
Hey, I got a question for you guys. And because I haven't read the books, and Phil, you have, Jordy, you.
I've only read the first two. I have not. Okay. There's four originals, I think, and then there's a bunch of side ones. I've only read the first two.
So I consider myself to be quite a cinema guy, a cinema buff, where I can follow along with anything. I just want to make sure we're all on the same page about this, because I wasn't 100% sure. But we saw a glimpse of Anya Taylor-Joy and some sort of maybe time jump, maybe vision, probably a vision, because that's kind of what we're going with in the first two movies. That's the unborn sister, correct?
Yep.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
So here's, it's not a spoiler, this is a difference from the book. And so the first book, which is what we just saw play out on the screen, in the first book, the sister is actually born and she's there. But what that meant was that it took longer for Paul to get to this point by the end of the movie, because obviously the kid's got to grow. So what I guess Denis decided to do was just, I think this is like 9 months after his family's been killed, so it speeds it up. And then, so the sister's born, and you can tell there's pieces that are coming out there. So like when she does drinks the water, you saw the water kind of consume or go around the baby. And again, by her drinking the water, she gets all the knowledge. So in kind of context clue, that baby's going to get the knowledge as well. And then another thing in the book is, since the baby is born, it's not Paul that kills the Baron in the book, it's the sister that kills.
Wow. As a baby, or like as a child?
As a child, yeah. Okay. So as a child, she was born with the ability to be smarter than like everyone else, basically. Gotcha. Kind of how Denis kind of making it more logical. The reason she is because of the water, I guess. And then another main difference
I like that change.
Oh, me too. It makes sense. And yeah, again, like it didn't throw another character in there. It kept it more Paul focused. And another change he made, which I think we can all agree on is the best, what we love the most, is in the book, Shani is she's all on board with everything.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a fundamental difference. There's not everyone believes in the lease on Al-Ghaib. But in the book, like, they have children and stuff together. Like, they're married. Like, she's full on board with it. Where in this, he's taken it and he's went a different route with it. And now she's going to be kind of his conflict going into the next movie. So, like, even though I've read, like, I don't know where he's already doing stuff a little bit different. So I don't even fully expect it to follow the path of the books fully. Mm. So, like, I don't know. I mean, obviously, I think what we're going to see is she's going to come up and fight up against him. And again, if you've paid attention, all the people who said nothing happens in the first one. There's Paul has all these visions. Some come true, some do not. But in the first one, if you remember, he had a vision where she's stabbing him. So I think that's just like a little foreshadowing that they are going to butt heads on this point. So I'm excited to see what happens because I honestly don't know what's going to happen. But I would expect that Anya Taylor-Joy will be making an appearance, possibly.
Love that. I love her, by the way. So that was exciting. Yeah.
I guess and I went to Hatton and double checked it because I was talking to, we have a team manager who's an older gentleman who was obsessed with the books, and he even, you know, when you have a movie series that's so beloved and people have, like, they know every letter in and out, to put it on the big screen, like Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings, the real book buffs are always going to be let down.
Halo. You
cannot translate it.
Right.
Halo. All right. We get the director to cut that out, please. He was even blown away by this, but he mentioned some things to me as well about things they changed. And one thing that pretty much 9 out of 10 changes I really enjoyed. The only one that I feel like would have meant maybe more is that in the book, the whole death of Jameis that at the end of Dune 1, that's a huge event in, like, the books leading up to the second book too. Like, I think even Paul has to, like, take care of his family, James's family, after, like, that the ripples that caused are not really felt at all in this movie at all. There's some flashbacks and callbacks. It was even setting up in the Dune 1 that he was going to teach him the ways of the desert and all that stuff. And I wish they could have explored that a little more.
Yeah, that's true. We didn't get a lot of residual effects of that.
And I guess the biggest, the only thing that I really missed, especially after watching Dune 1 right before this, is that I was very sad to see that Charlie completely cut the Tufir Hawat character from Dune 2. That was such a awesome character to see. And he was just completely...
I think he cut several things out. One or a couple other actors who said they filmed scenes and they didn't get to be in it. I can't remember the names. And then...
Nick, what's going on? Nick, what's going on?
I don't know, man. I don't know. I'm just trying to think about how I look trying to do that. I was trying to do the eye.
What did he do? What did he do?
He was trying to do the eye.
He tried to do the Undertaker? You went full... Whoa.
It was like...
put the Doom bucket right below it.
It was like a very poor version of... was it Halle Berry Storm? Like, he's trying to control. But yeah, he said they did cut stuff, and it made me think, like, the Jameis thing. I wonder if they did, if there was anything with that, if they might have cut it. Because I was just thinking, like, it would have been a perfect way for them to implant that part when they come back, because, you know, everyone's booing them and whatever. Like, they killed Jameis. Like, he, as a leader part for Paul, he could have went and found the family and at least said a few words. Because we even know it still was with him as he was going throughout the movie. But I'm curious, like, again, if they do a director's cut, really, or whatever, and it's 5 hours, I'm all in.
Yeah, give me more.
Because the team manager guy also said, like, that Tufir Hawat character that Nick so perfectly impersonated just now. He apparently, in the second book, he's, like, pretty important, too, behind the scenes to get the Harkonnens to look for Paul.
He was a great character.
I know.
Yeah, we don't see him, like... I'm trying to remember the first movie. We don't see, like, his death or anything, right? In the first movie.
No, we don't. But yeah. I mean, I guess not spoiler alert because it's not movie canon. But in the second book, he kind of manipulates the Harkonnen a lot, and I think he dies eventually. He gets killed when he finds out that Al-Ghaib is Paul, and he is supposed to kill him, but he doesn't. And then he gets killed, I think. That's what I heard. But yeah, but that, those are probably only, you know, whatever. And I'm not a huge guy on the books, but those are the two changes that I've heard from several people that I thought, like, you know what, that would have been cool then to include, but that doesn't take away anything about how freaking amazing this movie was.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, you know, we've been kind of raving about this movie, and for good reason. There's a few things that did bother me a little bit. Number one was Christopher Walken absolutely phoned his performance in, and I don't know what was going on because everyone else in the cast was like giving this their all, like just dialing in like the performance of a lifetime. And then you got Christopher Walken, and you said it a little bit in the intro, Phil. It was distracting because it was like he was just mailing this thing in. Like, he gave us absolutely nothing. And it was like, that was disappointing because that the Emperor ended up being, you know, pretty big role in the movie, and he just mailed it in to me. He gave it nothing.
He didn't know what the fuck he was in, dude. He had no idea. Yeah.
And one other thing was, we've been talking about Star Wars a lot. We found out that later on in a trilogy that we don't like to talk about very much, but we found out that Palpatine was getting it on. And now we got the image of Baron Harkonnen Skarsgård getting it on as well. And I just didn't like the image of that either. So I got to give, those are the two.
I'm still trying to figure out the image. I can't place it. Oh. I can't figure it out. What happened,
man? Baron, man.
You think it was happening in the black oil bath? You think that's where it happened?
Hey, those that kind of look kind of good. I want to dabble in there, you know.
So since we're on the negatives, I guess. So yeah, I'm agreeing with you, Nick, on the Christopher Walken. Super distracting, was not necessary. And the crazy thing is, when we saw he was casted, I was like excited. Like, oh, Christopher Walken, that's cool because I love Christopher Walken. Yeah, not necessary. And then my second thing, I don't know if this happened to you guys, or maybe it was just me, or maybe I just panicked. And so, and the second time, I don't think it bothered me that much because I realized it. But the part where we get to where he's going to make his venture out into the desert, and they're like, you won't survive the summer. And then he's walking, and then we think he sees Jamis, and then it's actually Shani. Right at that moment, there's like some weird editing that takes place. Like, it's like we jump, and it's like I got lost. Like, for a moment there, I thought I fell asleep because I've been known to fall asleep here. And I thought I missed something. It's like he left, and then he came back, and then it's like, because he was supposed to originally go to that top of sand and then come back. And then he went, and then it was like he was already with the whole group again. I don't know. There was like some weird editing.
I feel like it was probably cut. Something was cut.
Yeah, there was something.
He fell out of sequence.
Right. And then it kind of went. From that point forward, they kind of did more of those. It wasn't that obvious, but then I got on board with like, okay, we're just cutting the things to make sure we keep the pace going. So I don't know, it was just weird for me that first time.
I didn't
time
notice
through.
That, Phil, but I think now that you're mentioning it, I was that makes sense to me that would be kind of strange.
Y'all ready to rate this thing?
Let's rate it.
Uh-oh.
We're going to rate this movie out of 10
worms.
Popcorn bucket, if you will. Let's do this. We're gonna do that this time around.
Yeah.
All right. You know what, Nick? You started off giving your thoughts. Lead us into it, and your final rating out of 10 Dune 2 buttered up popcorn buckets. No popcorn.
So I feel like I would be doing a disservice to our rating system of popcorn buckets.
Doing a disservice.
I would be doing this a disservice. Thanks for catching that, Jordy. No, that was all Jordy. That was not me at all. I would be doing this a disservice if I were to not give us the highest possible rating for a movie. This is a full 10 buttered up Dune popcorn buckets.
No popcorn.
Go see Dune 2. Refresh yourself with Dune 1. Dune 1's amazing. Dune 2 has surpassed it, and it's one of the best movies I've ever seen, and I have to give it our highest rating, 10 Dune 2 popcorn buckets.
Let's see. I can't do that.
You can't Dune it?
I can't Dune that. I cannot Dune that. All right? I'm not doing that because I can't. There's only one movie that deserves 10 buttered up, no popcorn buckets.
We're having and such a good podcast, Jordy. We were all dried out with sand, and we don't need to go into the ocean.
And the butter came in. All right. Well, we need some water. All right. And you last podcast, Phil was talking about crossovers, G.I. Joe, Transformers, Jurassic Park. Hey, when that water's coming to that desert, you know what's going to come with it. Some highly intelligent great white sharks and LL Cool J. All right. So.
But Jordy, you're missing. Like, if you not notice, the dune bucket looked like it was good to go. If there was a shark bucket, they have teeth and they hurt. So obviously, dune has to win.
All right. Well, here's the thing, though. I want to give it 10 out of 10. Buttered up, no popcorn buckets, but I can't do it because I always gotta leave a little bit of room, you know, because what if they're gonna go one up it with Dune 3, you know, then it gotta
leave there's room at the mountaintop, Jordy, there's room up there.
Yeah,
I'm gonna give it 9.5.
Half a bucket. What happened to the other half?
Yeah, you don't want to know. I'll tell you off air. You know what I mean?
So uncomfortable. 9.5.
9.5. Buttered up Dune 2 popcorn buckets with no popcorn, baby. Leave a little bit of room.
Phil?
You got a dream. You got a dream.
I gave the first one a 10. So how can I give this one any less than a 10? So it's got to be a 10. They all can be 10s, Jordy. The third one can be a 10 and still be better. It's the movie itself and everything it presented is a 10.
Thank you.
The only problem is Christopher Walken, and I can get past that.
He's at least not,
as it was written, it is
a
10.
More cowbell. As it was written, right. Phil, 10.
Okay. I just got one final thing to say. That's a wrap.